The world of comics has evolved dramatically in recent years. It's no longer the realm only of syndicated newspaper comics, comic books. Comics are now firmly established in the digital world, and comic artists have a significant presence in graphic novel publications. It may come as a surprise to learn that St. Louis is establishing itself as a comic artist writer community. Dozens of creators live and work in this area, some with very impressive and award-winning credentials. We have two accomplished comic artist writers with us. Mack Kent of Webster Groves is the New York Times best-selling writer and artist of the comics and graphic novels Mind Management and many others. He's won multiple awards. Rory, as she prefers to be known, writes a webcomic known as Tiny Pink Robots, which chronicles her daily life. Thank you both so much for coming in to see us. Nice to have you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Mack, let me start with you. I'm surprised, and I think a lot of people are surprised, that the size of the comic community, if I can call it that, here in St. Louis. Why St. Louis?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. I became aware of it when I would go to conventions in other cities. I would go to Seattle and be at a table, and other cartoonists would come up and be like, oh, do you know Dan Zetwalk or Kevin Azinga? Or they'd list off like 10 other cartoonists, you know, that are in St. Louis. I'm like, oh, how do you know those guys, you know? And I would go to other cities, and those guys are just my friends. And I think when you're close to it, like you are here, everybody's in this small community, you don't really think about it. You know, those are my friends, and we all do the same thing, and we're all writing and drawing comics, and you don't think about how big it is, you know, until you go outside the cities.
Rory, is there enough work out there for all these people to keep busy and make a living?
Well, I mean, making a living is, you know, but there's definitely a wide open area on the internet for people. Anyone who wants to get their work out there, there is room for them. And there's a ton of audience.
It's changed everything, I'm sure. Like the internet has changed almost everything. It's changed everything in your field, I'm sure.
Absolutely. People who before would have to go through a pitch process, you know, getting in touch with editors and publishers, now they can have webcomics and have that on the internet. But also, you know, even in the last, I mean, I would say maybe like 3 or 4 years, crowdfunding and sites like Patreon, which is a patronage site, which is kind of similar to public broadcasting and public radio, where people donate to sustain artists.
And it's a first-class operation, obviously.
Yeah, it's allowing people to make a living doing this without necessarily having to get the eye of publishers.
Mack, how has it changed your life?
I would say, I know when I was growing up, I was reading Marvel Comics and everything was in New York. And I'd be like, oh, if I'm going to do comics, I'm going to have to move to New York, you know, improve myself. But then as I got older and the internet happened and you could start doing this stuff at home, you know, I realized, oh, I can do my own comics, and I can do, you know, just from a publishing standpoint, even if you're doing print, you know, you can upload your work. And I'm basically telecommuting from St. Louis to New York, or St. Louis to Seattle, or St. Louis to Portland, and just working with publishers and even overseas, you know, French publishers. And I've made friends, you know, through that, you know, getting books published in French. It's awesome. I mean, you go to other countries. It just has opened up everything. You know, you don't have to live in Manhattan, you know, to make a living and make a name for yourself.
And speaking of publishing overseas, does anything get lost in the translation, if you will, or the fact that it's graphic eliminate that as a problem?
That's a good question. Not being able to read it, you know, I hope that it translates. but the books seem to do well, so whatever it is, it's something's translating. But I think it's actually a little tougher, you know, because the meanings of the words and everything, and working with the images, you have to be very specific about the intent of how the words are working with pictures rather than just straight up prose.
Rory, did you want to add to that?
Yeah. I mean, on the internet, you have a worldwide audience. I've been kind of surprised that, like, I have a significant readership that comes from Germany. And a lot of other webcomic artists I know also have a significant German readership. But really, you know, if you look at the analytics of who's visiting your website, you get people who are English speaking from all over the world.
Don't answer this if you don't want to. But we mentioned the financial. We've kind of laughed before about making money in this. You do a daily comic, right? You do a daily print.
It was daily, and now it's twice weekly.
Okay. How do you make money doing that? I don't mean to be crass, but I mean, well, how do you make money doing this?
Well, a couple of years ago, I first kind of got into webcomics in 2007, and then it was really just based on page views, and you would make money doing advertising based on page clicks. But now there's a lot more avenues with social media. I make a lot of money on, I mean, I have a day job, so, you know, but that's a lot of comic artists also have a day job or they do side jobs. But you make a lot of money on commissions, and things like PayPal make it easy for people to commission your work. And you know, it's digital. You can send it digitally. You can send it through the mail. Really, that has made, if you just work kind of the system that's on the internet, you can cobble together money from all of these different sources. So it's not like a traditional thing where you're making a product and you send it to someone and they give you money. You're getting money from all of these different sources.
But Matt, you do have a product. You do have something that someone can hold in his or her hand.
Yeah. I think the thing that helped me make a living at this was getting laid off from my day job. I used to work at the Sporting News 10 years ago. I was at the Sporting News. Yeah. I got laid off. And then I was like, well, I'm just going to do it full time. And so I just decided to see how many comics I could do in a day every day for a year, you know, and try to start making it work. So I think there's different avenues to making money and making a living. You know, you can go the more traditional publishing route and get books published, and then you get an advance, just like anybody that writes a book. You get an advance and you live off that and you finish the book. And then with the web things too, I know you can make money. You know, a lot of times you're just providing free content, whereas people are visiting every day, and you can get money through advertising, like the banner ads on the sides, and then also you just driving that traffic there, you can sell T-shirts and different things. And then eventually you put out a book and then you make money off the book when it's done.
What's the status of comic books today that so many of us grew up with? I must confess, I haven't really looked recently. Are they still out there? Are they still in as many of them as there may have been at one time?
Yeah, I think in a lot of weird ways, it's like another golden age of comics unlike the original golden age, which was all superheroes. I think now we're in a golden age where there's so many different kinds of comics. You know, there's the stuff I do, which is more genre things with like personal stories sort of snuck in there. But then there's slice of life things and real stories and journalistic graphic novels and anything you want. Like if you're a fan of any kind of reading, like no matter what you read, like a normal kind of book, There's a graphic novel or a comic book that fits that same bill, you know.
Yeah. Did you want to answer?
Yeah, there's publishers like First Second and Top Shelf and Oni that they're doing stuff that's very different from what you would think from Marvel and DC. And I mean, even they are doing some interesting stuff now. But also self-publishing has become much more easy. A lot of printers do print on demand, so you don't have to get, you know, 1,000 books. So that has become very easy. And online marketplaces, you can sell your books online. And
there seems to be a real appetite for it out there. You know, look at the action movies, for instance, that are so very successful and make hundreds of millions of dollars. But what do you think is going on? Why would people be attracted to a graphic novel, for instance, as opposed to more traditional type? Are we dumbing down?
Here's what I'll say is I think that comic books and graphic novels and words and pictures is one of the few visual mediums that can provide a pure voice. Like if you're making a movie, you're working with hundreds and thousands of other people to provide this thing. And the same with books, you know, you're in a sea of books and editors and publishers. But with comic books, most of the time, like the best comics to me are the ones where it's one writer, one artist, and he's also drawing it or she's also drawing it. and they're providing this voice that is unadulterated. Like, there's no one interfering. It's like, this is the story that you want to be told, want to have told, and you're telling it, and no one's interfering. There's no market interference. There's no money interference. There's no editorial. It's just a pure vision. And I think a lot of what you're seeing with movies based on comic books is they're recognizing that, oh, it's a fertile ground for original ideas that are not being diluted by all this other stuff. And so then they can take that and sort of farm those ideas and make them into movies, you know. And I think that's the beauty of comics to me, is it's sort of a pure art form in a lot of ways.
I couldn't agree more. Yeah. There's also, I mean, as to content, March 1 and 2, books 1 and 2, is an autobiography of Congressman John Lewis, for example. I was just looking at the New York Times bestseller list. I guess there's also an autobiography of Bernie Sanders out there in comics. And there's a huge, I mean, comics is a medium. It's not constrained to any genre. So,
well, I wanted to get to that because I think that when we tend to think of comics, just the word itself makes us think of the Sunday papers or things that will give us a smile and make us laugh. But what I'm seeing and what we're finding all around us these days are comics that make you think.
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. I was thinking about this the other day, and I'm wondering about why am I doing comics? I'm a grown man, you know. Why am I still doing this? And I think, but if you go back and you look at, like, since the beginning of time, you know, cavemen have been drawing pictures on walls to tell stories. And then when you're a kid, you read children's books, and you're looking at pictures while your mother, father is reading the words to you. And as a grown-up, I feel like there's still something magical about how a picture interacts with words, you know. And just because I'm grown up doesn't mean I don't enjoy that interaction. And I think that's the beauty of comics too, is that when you realize that the words don't always have to explain what the picture is, the words can be different than what the picture is, and that you can be shown one thing and be reading something else. And I think that's where the magic of comics comes in, that we've just started to scratch the surface on what it can do.
And it's a little bit less passive because you have that visual element, but you can read it at your own pace. So you can take in everything you want. You know, I think it's kind of a brain heavy.
Yeah, it is. Activity. I mean, that's the difference between it and movies. It's movies, it's relentless. Like, you're being dragged along at this pace, and then it's done. Where with a comic book, you can actually pause and sort of reflect and think about it and, like, wonder what the author is trying to do here, and then continue or go back. And I think that's also a strength.
And the movie, you've got voices, and you've got music that is also pulling you in different directions. Again, the comic relies totally on the artist himself who has written it and drawn it.
Yeah.
When I was growing up, we used to read classic comics. Do you remember classic comics? Well, they would take the classic literature, you know, and put it in comic form, and it exposed lot of young people to
classics. You can still get those.
Classics, really? Illustrated. Yeah. We have a bunch of those.
Yeah.
Rory, one of the things that I understand is happening as a result of this kind of explosion in the community is the fact that it has become much more inclusive than it ever has been before. Formerly the province of white men, now it's gone well beyond that.
Oh, yes. And, you know, comics, you look at the golden age of comics, a lot of the people who were drawing and writing them were coming out of advertising. So obviously that skewed towards white guys. Nothing wrong with white guys. But, yeah, with the internet, I mean, you know, certainly – you know, women and marginalized people have been in comics for its whole run. I mean, women have been there since almost the get-go. And there's a big tradition of comics in Black-owned newspapers that kind of goes unsung. But yeah, I mean, it's really, the explosion really is due to the internet and being able to put your stuff out there and get an audience and not have to go through any kind of, say, even having the money to move to New York. You don't have to have the money to move to New York. You can just put your stuff out there and get thousands of followers, and then you're making money, and then maybe the publishers at the big comic companies actually notice that, and you end up writing for them.
How broad a range of material is there out there in general? I'm talking internet now. I mean, I'm not familiar with all of it. And by the way, we have access to a lot of what we're talking about here today on our website, sdlpublicradio.org. But in terms of range, from things that will make you laugh, as we mentioned a little while ago, to other kinds of things, how broad is that range?
It's as broad as your imagination, really. I mean, there is every kind. There must be tens of thousands of webcomics on the internet, just in English. Everything from, I mean, strip comics are really popular, something that you would, you know, be very similar to Sunday comics, but also story comics, sci-fi, fantasy, slice of life type comics. For example, my husband, it's a comic family. He does a slice of life comic, and it's been updating for 9 years. And, you know, it has a fan base. And all of these comics have a fan base. There's war comics. There's westerns. There's anything you can imagine.
You have been quoted as saying that young women are the vanguard of comic readers. I think I've got quote here before, if I can find it here, with all those teenage girls, the vanguard of the comic community. What does that mean, and what does it tell us?
I mean, that's my opinion, but I think it's informed from being at cons and interacting with people online. Teenage girls are incredibly passionate about art and literature and comics, and they don't bring with them some of the, I don't want to say hang-ups, but they don't bring preconceived notions. They don't really bring those. They see what they like, and they love it, and they have good taste.
Matt, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree.
Who's your audience? What is your audience, Matt?
I don't really know. That is a stumper. It's funny when I go to conventions, I run into everybody. So it's, you know, I get kids as young as probably 12, as young as I go, and then I get people into their 70s. You know, I've had that whole range, and I would say it's a pretty good mix. And I guess I'm pretty conscious of that too, because I feel like I want to do books. We've had like 40 or 50 years of superhero comics that are for teenage males, you know. It's like, I don't want to do those kinds of books anymore. You know, I grew up reading those, and I want to do something that is for everyone, you know. And I have a daughter who's 12, so I'm that having her made me extra conscious of, I want to do a book that when she's old enough, she'd be into it, you know, not just, oh, I'm going to read it because it's my dad's book, but like, oh, this book is interesting, and this book speaks to things that I would be interested in. And so I guess that's, if I was targeting an audience, it would be my wife and my daughter, who neither one of them grew up loving comics like I did, but I would love them to love comics.
Use your daughter as kind of a sounding board for some of the things you do?
Oh, yeah, definitely. There's been issues. There was an issue of mind management that I wrote, and it was a chapter in, I guess, volume 3, that I was telling her about. I'm like, oh, I based a character on you, and it's this girl who can sort of, like, communicate with animals and understand their feelings, and she... And she's like, oh, is it age appropriate? She was 11 at the time. And I was like, oh. I was like, hmm. And I lied. And I was like, yeah, it's age appropriate. And I went back and rewrote the whole issue so it was age appropriate, so she'd be able to read it. And it literally made that issue not probably my one of my favorite things I've ever written, you know, and it made it like doubly as good. And she was able to read it. So.
I think I read somewhere along the line that you've apparently got a movie deal in the works.
Yeah, I've had a couple. It's funny, in comics especially, I feel like everybody has a movie deal. Getting the movie actually made is the hurdle, you know. So yeah. Movie deals are fun. But yeah, mind management is the latest one. Ridley Scott optioned it, and it's in the works. So
Ridley Scott?
Yeah.
Oh, that's not bad company to be in. This would be an animated film?
No, live action. Yeah, live action.
Live action.
Yeah.
Oh, how exciting for you. Rory, we talked about the supportive community that we have here among the artists, and I have an email here from Ray Walsh, a writer and illustrator with Dollhouse. You may know.
Hi, Ray.
Anyways, it's an email, Rory. Anyway, he talks about how supportive this community is, but he says Ray Walsh. I thought it was a guy. Anyway, talks about other communities being very cutthroat. Is that something we should be talking about? Are we unique in that regard?
I can't really speak to other communities, but I find comics to be full of quite good people. I think it is very supportive, especially for a scene that's filled with a lot of people who are fairly shut-in type people.
Like to work alone, you mean?
Yeah,
loner types, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, there's definitely, it's a very solitary activity, unless you're in a studio, and most people aren't. It's solitary, but yeah, I found just going around to conventions, you can usually talk to someone who is incredibly well-known, and they're still incredibly gracious and kind.
And there are a lot of those conventions, aren't there? I mean, they seem to be everywhere, 24/7.
Oh, yeah.
Talking about being helpful, we have a tweet here from Caitlin writes, what advice would you give someone wanting to start on their own comics or graphic novels? Do you have any suggestions for someone getting started? Go ahead, Matt.
My number one advice is just do the work. You know, the more you produce, the better you're going to get. You can't help but be better. Don't worry about, like, the final product or getting published or any of that. You know, just do the work and tell your story and just keep churning out pages.
That's excellent advice.
Yeah,
I would add start with something manageable, because I think it's very easy to have very grand schemes and then they never get off the ground. But if you start with something small and you finish it, then you have that feather in your cap.
Yeah.
And once again, the internet is really a terrific way to get all of this, get that ball rolling.
Absolutely.
Right.
I mean, make sure you know that you're going to get some comments when you put your stuff up on the internet. But it's definitely a good place to get your stuff seen.
Matt, anything to add to that?
No, it's good advice. Yeah, you definitely open yourself up to criticism also, but I think that's
everywhere.
That's with any kind of art you do. You know, as soon as you put it out there, you got to be ready for it, and then take it or leave it.
Yeah,
rejection for people who are creative is really part of the process.
Oh, yeah, definitely
it really has to be. Well, fascinating stuff. It's really interesting to find out that we're playing such a significant role in this world of cartoons. And I wanted to get into political cartoons, but we don't have time for that. We'll do it another time, all right? Rory, thank you so much for being with us. And
thank you for having me.
Tiny Pink Robots is what folks should look for, among other things, on the Yet. We have connections or links to all of this on our website. And Matt Kent, thank you so much for being with us. Again, we'll find ways for people to get to your material as well. Thank you for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Archived versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.